But I'm glad to be here with you today to teach on just something just absolutely phenomenal. This is absolutely the key thing why I'm even up here. This is foundational to everything, you guys. You saw a lot of things on that video there of current circumstances and things. Some of you, maybe your military background, you kind of keep an eye to the news because, you know, if something weird happens in the news, all of a sudden it has personal implication on you almost immediately. Some of you could be on leave, all of a sudden you're called back. So there's stuff going on all the time. And I remember when we reached the year 2000, there was a book at Barnes & Noble, I think, and it was like the 20th century. And it kind of went through that whole book, 1900, 1901, 1902, 1903, all the way through. And it kind of had highlights, but it had the disasters, had all this stuff of every year, then, you know, 1914 war, then all, yeah, all of these things. And I just thought, as I was looking through that book, wow, what would it be like to have a book like that now for the 21st century? And just see the stuff that's going on. And then as I was watching this video here too, I was thinking, what if there's a video like that, you know, for every century? Every century. Because you know what? As you and I both know, there's always stuff that happens. But the end of the video would be exactly the same. You know, the circumstances, the things we're dealing with now are unique to us, and we're living them right now. And a lot of times they scare us, a lot of times they hurt us, a lot of times they distress us, they perplex us. But you know, every century has seen things, but the bottom line behind that is there's still a hope. No matter what the situation was in different times, the hope remains the same. Because you know, all those other people, they've kind of struggled, but guess what? They're all dead now, as far as living on this earth. But that one life is gone. But then comes the implications of what we're talking about here today. Look, either Jesus really is who he says he is, and his words are true, and whether Jesus has really done what he claimed, and that is he's risen from the dead to validate what he has said, or forget about the whole thing. It doesn't really matter. Look, it's not inspirational. Jesus isn't just inspirational. Jesus is either the truth or he's not. That's the way he set it up, and I appreciate that. He isn't just an alternative. Look, if Jesus, the claims of what Jesus said, if they are really true, validated by him rising from the dead, then we need to be all ears. But if that's not really, really true, if you can just take that part or leave that part, then it just diffuses the whole thing. And so, you know, I appreciate kind of where the world is in a lot of ways. Look, the planet's in trouble. A lot of people have said that for a long time. And in fact, it's really come to clarity recently. Any of you, have you ever heard of Earth Day? Has it been on the news? Do you know what day it is? It's April 22nd. And it started like in 1970. You know how it started? Someone in Cleveland noticed their river that goes through the middle of town was on fire. Yeah, water. Water was on fire because, and it's just been a point of pride ever since then for the city of Cleveland. And but they realized then, you know, we have an environmental problem. And so a lot of people started getting together and they started looking at the issues of, you know, trying to keep our planet cleaner, trying to keep it healthier. I resonate with all that. I think that's great because God created this world, okay? So we're to love this planet. And so they talk about issues of, you know, food and food supply. They talk about issues of water and clean water, not only around the world, but water supplies here. And that is a big issue for us in the next 10 to 20 years. And also even the air quality. And so if you notice, a lot of rules, a lot of things change. You know, when I was a kid growing up in California, I played football. I tell you what, man, the sky was so blue. I mean, the clouds were blue and gray. You couldn't see the real blue sky. That, you know, after football practice, every day, all of us just be hacking. There was so much smog in the air all the time. And, you know, they cleaned up a lot of that. And so all those things are good. But I want to say this. Truth is this. You can live for a few weeks without food, no doubt. Someone like me, maybe a few months. I don't know if anyone else here can relate with that. But for me, you know, for you, maybe a few weeks. And you can live without water, maybe for what? You know, what, a few days? Maybe at the most, what is it, 2-3 days? Okay. Four days? Okay, good. Okay, what about air? If you're to hold your breath right now, what, maybe a few seconds, a couple of minutes at the most? All right. So all those things. All right, that's fine. But one thing that you really can't live without is hope. Because if you don't have hope, you know what? Your soul's going to die. Your soul is going to die inside of you. And so this is what this series is about. As I was looking at, you know, for a lot of you, it's just been a tough time. It's been a tough couple. You know, I hear people saying, when's this going to be over? And you're just kind of hanging on. And Solano County, you know, the unemployment rate is really pretty high in our county. Do any of you have any friends that lost their jobs or they're jobless? Raise your hand if you do, if you have any friends around. Okay, all right. You know, there's just been a lot, and it's been like that. You know, there are people in school. Look, I know there's a little uptick right now in the tech world, and that's great, and there's some recruiting going on there. But overall, Fairfield Vallejo made the national news recently as one of top 10 regions in America. Do you know what it was about? Home foreclosures. Yeah, it's just been a tough, tough time for many people, and it's affected a lot of people in a lot of ways. So you have a lot of stress, I've seen marriages fall apart, it's just a lot of stuff like that. And so, you know, there are tough times going on now, and so I thought the best thing we could really teach on you guys is just hope. Hope and faith, because really, to talk about the unique circumstances, there's going to be tough times. Tough times are going to hit. It's done this throughout history. Like that book on the 20th century, and you know, there's something that's going to be out on the 21st century someday. And there's just some tough, tough things, but what is timeless in all of this is what Jesus Christ has done. And so you have New Life notes. You should have them. And I suggest you get them out. It looks something like this. If you haven't got these out yet, it just makes it a lot easier to follow along with what we're teaching here today. And the very first thing, there's something I can do with you today since I'm live teaching. And so it's called interactive here. And so I'm going to have you all actually read something with me today. Are you game to do that? Can you do that? Table people, are you all right with that? I know you think you're invisible on the tables, but I can actually see you over there. Okay? Okay. All right. So let's read this verse together. It starts with the word because. Okay, ready? Because God raised Jesus Christ from the dead, your faith and hope can be placed confidently in God. Now, the key word I want you to circle there is hope. And because there's a difference between hope and optimism. You know, the idea of positive thinking, you know, it has some merit, I guess. But the idea of positive thinking is this idea of self-talk that you can just talk your way into a new reality. And so a lot of times optimism can actually deny the facts. So you can have a situation where you have a diagnosis and you just kind of deny it. Oh, no, things are fine. Have you ever heard of that song? What is it? The sun will come out. What is it? The sun will come out tomorrow. Bet what? What are you going to bet? Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow what's going to be fine? The sun. I forgot the lyrics after that, okay? But it's the whole thing that, you know, just have a, you know, just be chipper. Just think positive thoughts. Just think magical thoughts and everything's just going to be fine. And I get the idea, oh, John, you just don't want to be doomsday. You're just being a downer. You know, there's always a flower to smell somewhere, whatever. Yeah, you can smell a flower and have terminal cancer, okay? And it's fine to smell the flower while you can. But what hope does is something much more significant than that. What hope does is it will face the dirty, rotten facts of your life. Because it might be one of the worst days of your life. Just like a guy that I really respect. He's over 90. And you know, he just told me this week, guy, deep man of faith, just told me this week, he looked in my eye and says, John, I've had the worst day of my life this week. It's because a spouse that he loved dearly for almost 70 years passed away this week. This is a man of faith, but this is a man of hope. And he's not saying, you know, I know tomorrow's going to be better. It's going to be different and tough for a long, long time because of that loss. But he does believe in hope. He does believe in a day after this with Jesus Christ. This is what hope is. This is what I'm going to talk about today. This is the premise. And so I guess you can just take it or leave it on this. And I say that respectfully. But something historic has happened when Jesus Christ came here. He is either who he says he is or just miss all this. You just can't put him on a shelf with Buddha and Muhammad and blah, 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 blah. He is who he really is, or just get him off the shelf. And it's just kind of a free-for-all, whatever, you just want to pick and choose smorgasbord thing. But he has set up such a radical choice that you have to make about who he is. And so what I'm saying for here today, if there's real hope to face life and the unpredictableness of things, and believe me, I am not disrespecting the idea of interpretation and the idea of exploring truth, and I am so not there. That's why, you know, I pursued PhD stuff in comparative philosophy of religion. And I've done that at, you know, different graduate schools. So I do understand the roots of a lot of this stuff. But I am saying this. When we say things like the date of today, what is it, April 24th, what year? 2011. We're measuring that against something, are we not? It's being measured against something. So in just the real practical world, what we call, you can call it the Occidental or Western mindset, and now it's become global because of the global economy, we work off of this calendar where something we're measuring happened, at least on a date we've chosen to choose to call it, the birth of who? The birth of who, do you know? Jesus Christ, yes. And so there is this gigantic historical precedent that has taken place that has influenced everything here. And why in the world would that happen? When he was alive, he had very few followers. Did you know that? He had a core group of maybe 100 people. He had a tight core group of maybe 12. And there were tons of other messiahs claiming things at the time. And they were doing all this stuff. How in the world did this backwater guy, carpenter from northern Israel at the time, conquered by the Romans, how in the world did this turn into this gigantic behemoth to where we have over 2 billion people this time and this season saying Jesus Christ is risen from the dead? How in the world would that happen? It just almost seems implausible that could ever. It is psychologically disingenuous to say, well, it was delusional, and they just thought up this story because they thought it's good. You know, don't tell people the truth. Tell them a story they need to hear. There is no way that could have happened. That is psychologically disingenuous to ever think that that would be the case. Something happened. Something happened that caused this gigantic explosion. And so the premise here today is this. It's what the scripture said. Because God raised Jesus Christ from the dead, not just in someone's spirit, not just in someone's imagination, he really did. Your faith and hope can be placed confidently in God. So the hope that I'm talking about today and for this series is based on this. This is a hope that might say, yeah, this might be the worst day of your life right now. But it's a hope that also says that I believe God can bring you through this, and I believe that God is in control. And that's kind of like showing all these circumstances there, but if Easter's really happened, if Jesus really is who he says he is, you know what? You need to take it serious. And so where do you get hope for the real issues of life? I want to talk just briefly, just three short stories from three people. You might have heard of some of them. Maybe you haven't. But I want to bring them in front of you right now. And the first one of them is Mary Magdalene. This is someone you would have never, ever heard of. It's amazing. Jesus said that people are going to know about your story. And here we are, proving Jesus right once again. Why would she ever be known? Some thought she was a woman of the streets. You know, but for sure, this is a lady that had a really rough upbringing. You know, she was raised convinced no one loved her. You know, I say this respectfully, but, you know, you've heard the phrase, you know, daddy issues sometimes. That could actually be for a young man or a young woman, couldn't it? But, you know, it's this idea that she gave her whole life to all kinds of different men that promised her everything, and they always left her. All they wanted from her was her body. And this is someone who looked for love in all the wrong places, and she was unlucky in love. And she was just stumbling through life. She maybe got in, caught up in self-destructive cycles and, you know, unadvised affair after affair after affair, and her heart was broken every time, and the man left her every single time. You know what? That could be for a young man too, couldn't it? You know, and you poured yourself into someone else, and they've left you. And so that's kind of where she was coming from. And then she met Jesus Christ. And Jesus was the first man to look at her, not just to see her body. And he looked at her. He looked in her eyes, and he validated her, and he respected her, and he valued her in a way that had never happened before. And he had no agenda. She couldn't believe it. Says, can there even be a man like this? That valued her and saw value in her that had never been seen before. Because no one else valued her. You know, all the men just saw her as an object. All the women saw her as a threat. And so she was not only a woman. Now listen, you know how women were seen in this time? Actually, in the Jewish culture, women were elevated more than the general culture at the time. But this is still how they were seen. You know what a rabbi would pray at this time of Jesus? This is what a rabbi would pray out on the corner in the marketplace. He would go, "Dear God, thank you that I'm not a Gentile. That is, that I'm not a non-Jew." And he'd go, "Dear God, thank you that I am not a dog." And then you know how he'd close the prayer. "And dear God, thank you that I am not a woman." Truly, that's how they would pray. And I'm sure the women quietly would be muttering under their breath, "And thank God you're not a woman too," you know. And I would resonate with that, and we would today. But here you have this woman who has zero value in the eyes of her culture and society. She's been diminished. And you know, when we look at our culture, we value certain type of people. We do overall. We value youth, do we not? You know, what do you think Botox is all about? Is it not? You know, aren't wrinkles equated with age? Okay, and what do you think, you know, we want to look the best we can look as long as we can. And what we mean by that usually is look as young as we can. And so what happens, we don't really honor age the way we used to. And so when people get older, they're called over the hill. You're not really interested in their opinions anymore. And so maybe some of you feel marginalized that way. Maybe some of you felt marginalized just because you are a woman. And a lot of times in our culture, women, it's just been tougher. It's been tougher. Come on, let's face it. And you know, maybe you're a guy, maybe you used to be, okay, a vice president of some company somewhere. Company leaves, or you've been in real estate, boom, the market flattens out. And so you're trying to work anywhere you can. So you're at Starbucks, and that's great, because, hey, you can get health benefits there, isn't that right? But it's not the amount of money you used to make. And so you're there at Starbucks, and all of a sudden, three dudes that used to be on your team, and you were the lead of the team, are coming in, and they're looking at you kind of awkwardly, and you're looking back. You go, "Yeah, give me a venti misto non-fat with toffee in it, you know? Yeah, sure, okay." And you know, and there's this difference, and you're feeling marginalized. You're feeling marginalized from that. It's kind of, you go to Walmart, and you go to the parking lot, and someone drives a Bentley and parks it right next to you. Do you know what a Bentley car is? It is a car you will never own. That's what a Bentley car is. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's $200,000-$300,000. And they get out of the car, and you're thinking in your mind, what are they doing here? What are they doing here? But then when you're done shopping, you drive out of the parking lot, you run into like a young man I saw. He's kind of, you know, he's a nice-looking young man, a little rough around the edges. He's holding up a sign, "Hungry, out of work, we'll work for food." And he kind of had an awkward look on his face. And I'm thinking, what's he doing here? What's he doing here? Not like he's a bum, but like what's going on in his circumstances of his life? But there's a difference in how we value the Bentley driver and the dude with the placard. You see what I mean? But Jesus doesn't. And there might be stages in your life where there's a pecking order and there's a ranking order. And maybe sometimes you're at the top and you're getting this accolades and respect, and sometimes not at all. Maybe you were everything when you were a mom, and all of a sudden your kids at age, they don't really want a mom anymore. Maybe everything you put in was self-esteem with certain areas of your life, but all of a sudden that's gone. And that's kind of where Mary was at, and then what Jesus had done for her. And so look at your scripture here. We're going to look at three little passages from John, like John 20 and John 21. She was absolutely devastated Jesus had been murdered. Why? Because he was the source of her value. He was the source of her self-esteem. And it was just like when he died, she thought life was over. And I've talked with people that way. "Man, when she walked out on me, life isn't even worth living anymore. I can't even move on. I can't even go on." And there's people that really feel that way. That's how Mary Magdalene was feeling. And so Jesus' body couldn't be taken care of on the Sabbath, which is Saturday. That's against Jewish law. So early Sunday morning in the dark, she's stumbling around in this graveyard where the crypt where he was being laid. And she had these perfumes that she's going to pour on his body and prepare his body. And she was going there. And that's kind of where we pick up the story here. and she comes to the crypt, and Mary Magdalene, look at your notes here then, Mary Magdalene stood crying outside the tomb. While she was still crying, she bent over and looked in the tomb and saw two angels. Now, it doesn't say she recognized them as angels at the time, but she saw two angels dressed in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been. So it's gone. So she's shocked. She's looking, seeing two guys in here. Of course, guys have authority over her. That's her mindset, because given how she's been conditioned in her culture. But yet, she's very adamant in what she's saying. And woman, why are you crying? She answers, they've taken my Lord away, and I don't know where they have put him. And then she turns around and saw a man standing there, and she doesn't recognize that it's Jesus. Could be because it's dark. But he asked, woman, why are you crying? Jesus asked. And says, who are you looking for? She thought he was the gardener. So she said to him, if you took him away, sir, tell me where you put his body, and I will go and get him. And then Jesus simply said to her, Mary. And then she recognized him, and she said in the Hebrew word, Rabboni, and she doesn't go up and hug him. What does she do? She takes off running, and she goes and tells the disciples, and says, I have seen the Lord. I've actually seen him. And so what do we do with this whole passage for us? How does that connect? There's two questions here that are really powerful. Jesus asks, why are you crying? And Jesus asks, who are you looking for? You know, there's kind of a secret. You know what? Grown-up boys cry too. Did you know that? They do. You know how they cry sometimes when they have a bad day? They come in the door, and if the dog happens to be there, the dog gets booted across the room. That's how a lot of guys cry. Maybe not actual tears, but they're kind of just raging and running around, and I'm fine, you know. But they're crying inside, or it's secret crying. You know, maybe in the shower and no one's around, or maybe when you're in a car by yourself. You know, what losses, what things come to us? And we just think the world's in an end because I lost that job. I don't know what you're going to do. You're going to lose your house. Things are happening. And then Jesus asks, who are you looking for? And so often we're looking for someone to validate us. If someone would just love me, someone just show me that I'm worthwhile, that I have a place on this planet. And Mary knew all about that, but Jesus fulfilled that for her. And Mary is transformed. She was completely hopeless. She thought that the living Jesus walking with her every day on the planet had to be what she needed. But after Jesus died and rose again from the dead, and she encounters him, her life is completely changed. Completely changed. And so the blank here with this, it's never too late. One you can put here, for every one of us here, it's never too late for a miracle. It's never too late for a miracle. God can have a miracle for each one of you. Maybe a miracle for you is a miracle from a broken heart. Maybe a miracle for you is that some gal will actually marry you. Okay, that'll be a miracle. But God needs to maybe make you marry a ball, okay? Maybe there's some issues in your life that need to be worked on. I could change that too, him, her. So the deal is it's never too late for a miracle, but God knows what's best for you. It's impossible for people to do as possible with God, and we know that everything works together for good for those that love God. So another guy I really resonate with is Thomas. Thomas is a guy, he's probably a guy after my own heart. This probably defined my life really, really well. And I think that's part of the reasons why, you know, I got so many degrees in philosophy and stuff like that. First of all, I think one of them, just show credibility as you're listening out there. Because I know there's a lot of questions, well, what about this and that? And everyone kind of likes to be pseudo-intellectuals, and that's good. And I really applaud you for that. But I just want to say I paid my dues also to be able to be up here and talk in terms of a faith claim. Talk in terms of the validity of being able to do this without intellectual suicide. And I think one of my inspirations here has been Thomas. Now, this is the group with a bunch of guys. The group with a bunch of guys is Jesus told them for over 3 hours, three years, look, I'm going to be arrested, crucified, and then I'm going to rise again from the dead. But they didn't hear what he was saying because they had an agenda of who they expected Jesus to be. Kind of like what's going on in the Middle East right now. You have Tunisia, you have Libya, you have Egypt, you have Syria. Yeah, you have this kind of freedom movement going on. Yemen, some of these places, and it's been horrible to see the tragedies go on there. You know, that type of passionate cry for freedom was what was going on at the times of Jesus, because the Romans had come in and oppressed and just squashed the whole area. So they're looking for this political champion. So when Jesus is going, you know, I'm going to be arrested, and I'm going to die, But don't worry, I'm going to rise again. They weren't hearing him because they wanted to hear their agenda of what they want Jesus to be in their life. Do we tend to do that? Can we tend to say, I'm going to try the God thing, but this is what I expect, God, from you for my life? And God's saying, you know, I have a plan for your life. Yeah, okay, I know. But I have a plan for my life too. And so, God, I need you to cooperate with me on this. And then when Jesus actually died, they were devastated. And they ran, they scattered, they ran all their own different places. But it says in the book of John that evening the disciples were meeting behind locked doors because they were afraid of the religious leaders. You know why? Because the religious leaders wanted to kill them. So I would validate that fear, would you? Yeah, I'd say that's a good enough fear. But suddenly Jesus was standing there among them. And so locked doors, he's here, he's there, okay? You could call that kind of an old school Star Trek thing. But even quantum physicists would agree that it is very feasible, the idea of being able to take molecular mass and take it from here to there. They don't know how to do it, but they know theoretically, at least in our universe, laws of universe, that is a possibility. So I don't know how it happened. I do believe it happened. And suddenly Jesus was standing there among them. And notice what he says here. He says, peace be with you. Now, if you had been in a room and you had a cup of, you know, drinking something, and you're all in there, you're scared already for your lives, and the person who was your leader was dead, and all of a sudden he appears among you just out of the blue, how would you react to that? I think you heard dropped cups crashing on the ground. I think that's one thing you heard. And there might have actually been a couple of puddles on the ground with a couple of these guys. You know, what happened here? And so Jesus kind of humorously goes, peace be with you. And then it says this. It says he held out his hands for them to see. This, he says, look, I'm not some kind of phantom. I'm some kind of delusion here. I am really here. Come on, go ahead and touch me. And it says they were all filled with joy when, what? When they saw the Lord. Again, it wasn't just some kind of thing that they cooked up. But one of the disciples, Thomas, was not with the others when Jesus came. And so they told him, we have seen the Lord. Who? They told Thomas that. But he replied, I won't believe it unless I see the nails in his hands and my fingers in them, and I'll place my hand there. You know, I really resonate with Thomas. You know why? Thomas is a know-it-all. Thomas has such confidence in his own personal intellect. And so it doesn't matter if there's a whole bunch of other people that have all seen this together. He's going to say, obviously, you are all delusional. Obviously, you are all wrong. Obviously, you know, you guys are just crazy. I need to be the guy. If I can see this guy, and if I can figure this out, then maybe. And then the story goes on. Jesus actually came and appeared to him too. And he says, look, feel my hands, put your hand in my side. But then he says this, very key thing here. He says this, stop doubting and believe. Now, he didn't say that belligerently. He never criticizes his doubts. He never ridicules his doubts. In fact, the Bible says healthy skepticism is a valued trait. Never in the Bible are you to commit intellectual suicide. But there is a point. What Jesus is saying, it's delusional to think somehow you can stay uncommitted. We are creatures of faith. And you're going to believe something. Even to say you don't believe nothing is a belief that there's nothing. And so what he's basically saying, look, I've given enough to you all to believe. So I'm inviting you to stop doubting and believe, because you can make a habit of just doubting. And you know what goes right into relationships? I've known people who have been married for years, and I've talked with husbands. Yeah, I still don't know whether she loves me or not. And he's sitting there, three kids. Are you kidding me? A woman will have three kids with you. You don't think there's any kind of love there? Are you kidding me? And so you can have this skepticism in you that just goes on and on and on. And so the point is this. Thomas had followed Jesus a long time. It's like you can be at church for a long time and never really cross over the line of real faith. And I think this is the point where he did. And so the blank here, it's never too late to start believing. Never too late to start believing. And that's what Thomas did. And so I'm going to put a list up here, and this has to do with what Brad talked about a little bit earlier, about these small groups we're going to start. Because when I look in our culture and in our community, really the only thing that I can offer people is faith, and faith that God's going to help us through tough times that some of you might be in. And so a list is going to come up right now of six phases of faith. And so you can write these down while I'm talking to you. And we're going to go through these in a small group over the next 6 weeks. And you can be a part of that too. Because dream is just kind of that heady thing where you think of a big thing that can happen in your life. And it can start out at a young age. Like, you know, some of you at a young age really had a dream that you'd be in certain places of your life. And it's good to dream that way. You know, we ask little kids, we interview them. What's one of the things we ask a kid? Do you remember? What are you going to do when what? When you grow up, right? And they'll say, I'm going to be a NASA astronaut, or you know, I'm going to be an NBA player, or just all these different things. And maybe some of you had those dreams, so you look back on it, and you kind of chuckle and goes, oh, that's nice. But then you start to have other dreams as the world broadens for you. But what can happen then is you kind of make a decision to take action. Some of you are stuck, though. Some of you are even stuck in a dream. You're going, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? You just feel kind of, you're just drifting along. And some of you are going, whoa, man, I just hit 30. Whoa, I'm out of my 20s already. Maybe I can't play video games the rest of my life. No, I could do that. You know? And I'd say, God bless you. You can do that. Just don't make it your whole life, okay? Okay? Especially since, oh, never mind. I am so ADD. I should say, since Microsoft really screwed up Halo, you know, you might have to go other directions. But there are good things that you can be a part of, and there are things you can do. Okay. But what can happen in our walk is we can have delays. And so doesn't go as fast as you thought. And maybe you thought you're going to be in this great marriage, and you have problems, and you're not working through issues as fast as you can. You know, American culture is like this. Only in American culture do you have a two-hour movie where the whole world could be at stake, and we resolve the whole issue and save the whole world in 2 hours. Only in America do you have that. You're going to have a half-hour TV show where a marriage is on the rocks, and within a half hour, everything is all worked out. And we expect it to be that way in our life here. And sometimes God is going, not yet, and we hear, no. And so there's delays, and so that leads also, as we're walking through these stages of faith, and the story of what we call life happens, is difficulties. We run into difficulties and we run into problems, and this is when we start to question ourselves, start to doubt ourselves, and we start to go, man, did I miss something here? Or is this all there is to life? Or, man, I thought when I got married that my life would be fulfilled. Or I thought when I became single, or I thought being single, I'd have my freedom and I'd be so much more fulfilled. I'd have options, do what I wanted. And then what happens to many times is the dead end. And that's where you're just kind of saying, you know, I've done a lot of things, I've invested a lot of things, and now look where I'm at wherever you're at right now. And you're kind of looking at yourself in the mirror, and you're going, I gave my whole life to this job, and now it's gone. You know, I gave my whole life to this career, and now with this injury or whatever, I'm out. What am I going to do now? Or, you know, I invested so much in this relationship, and now the wedding's canceled. I gave everything to that man, and now the marriage is over. And you don't have any answers. And you know, a lot of people, you get to that point, you get to that place, and you're just wondering. And here's the truth of it. That's a tough place to be, but it can be a good place to be if it makes you come to the place where your only deliverance really is. Because Jesus Christ died, but he rose again. And it's only Jesus who can reinvent or repurpose you, or give you a new dream and give you a new hope. He's the only one that can do that, even in the midst of all of these things. And so we have this series that's based on this. I have a friend of mine, his name is Rick Warren, and he pastors a large church. He helped us at the very beginning when we launched our church here, and I have personal letters from him cheering me on and whatever. So he's a mentor of mine, and he has taught a DVD series that he used with his church, and I got permission, and then he put a product together called Everything is Possible with God. And so we're going to do this in all of our small groups for the next 6 weeks. We're going to take each one of these steps that we just talked about here on how God builds your faith and the idea of decision and dreams and delays and difficulties and dead ends and ultimately deliverance. And so if you're not in a small group, you can start your own small group starting today. I don't care if this is the first time you've been here. If you have a group of friends, you can pick this up free in the lobby, and it comes with a DVD teaching for like 20 minutes for each week, for 6 weeks. And then there's a question guide. So you don't have to teach anything. You just get a group of guys together at lunchtime, maybe a group of people, Starbucks, whatever, have a little laptop here. But one thing we do ask you to do, there's a form right here you can fill out. And then out in the lobby, there's a place where you can pick this up. So it's just basically your name. You can put your text information or email or whatever and say, hey, here's a group of people. We're going to meet together. And then we'll give you this this stuff for free, okay? Because we want you to really, we want to offer you the only thing that's really going to count, and that's faith. Faith to help you. And so that brings us to what Thomas did. It's never too late to start believing. If you didn't fill in that blank, did you fill that in already? Okay, good. So, you know, sometimes it's appropriate for here. You can just tell me, here's a phrase I know, it's popular, move on. You can just say that. We've already done that. Okay, move on. So one of the things that I want to mention here to you on this is the reason Thomas doubted in these phases of faith so much is, again, he was isolated and he was alone. And he missed out on what Jesus was doing. And so it's so important to be together in order to hear that. Look, here's a verse, 2 Peter 3:9. The Lord isn't late in his promise as some measures lateness. He is being patient for our sake. He does not want anyone to perish, so he is giving more time for everyone to repent. And so what does that have to do with us? It has to do with delay. Sometimes when God's delaying in our life, he's waiting for us really to come to him to respond to his call within our life. You know what we call that? Repentance. So you can come to church all you want. You can kind of observe and whatever and try to take things to be a better person. All that's fine. That's applaudable. But there comes that point where Thomas was at where it's a 180-degree turn. It's called repentance. It's like, I'm going to turn my back. Doing life my way hasn't really worked out real well. And I'm turning my back on that, and I'm going to do things God's way. It's called repentance. And what happens when you do that is your past is forgiven, you're given a purpose right now, and you're given an eternal destiny in heaven forever. Your past is forgiven, you're given a purpose right now, and you're given eternity. And this kind of leads us to this other disciple then, which is Simon Peter. Let's take just a couple of minutes on him. Simon Peter is the type of friend in your life where you screw up. Is the guy, Simon Peter would have been a horrible therapist, okay? Because if someone would have been there crying because they screwed up their life or whatever, you know what Simon Peter would have said? That's disgusting. You deserve everything that's coming to you. You know, why don't you just be smarter about life? That would have been Simon Peter. Because he was this highly driven type guy that was pretty smart, and he's way more confident than really his abilities. You know what he was? He would have been a perfect California entrepreneur. That dude that just jumps out there, takes risks, and the only people he wants around him are people who are highly invested, highly energetically focused on what he wants to happen, and he has his agenda, and that's the type of people he wants. He wants to manage everyone, thinks that his take on life is the best take on. Did any of you have a know-it-all in your life? Any of you here? Raise their hand for them, would you? No, just kidding. All right. Yeah, and this is kind of where Peter was at. And he was actually overconfident on a lot of these things. And so this is what he is doing with Jesus. Jesus saying, you know, I'm going to be arrested. I'm going to be killed. It's starting to sink in for Peter. You know what Peter did? He wanted to manage Jesus. He goes, Jesus, you know, all these other disciples, you know they're losers, right? You and I both know that. But look at me, Jesus. Look, you can count on me. I have got your back. I have got your back. You know that, right? You know, have I ever let you down? And that was it. And you know what Jesus said to him? Jesus said, Peter, what did he say? You're going to deny me 3 times. And you know, I've talked with people like Peter, people who's, you know, they're ambitious. They say, you know, they get up at a wedding, you know, they get married, and in the back of their mind, they won't ever really admit it, but they're looking at their either their husband or their wife, you know, whatever, and they're thinking, wow, you are so lucky to marry me. I know I'm marrying just a little bit under, but I'm going to do you a favor, man, and you just hook on to me, and life is just going to be great. Count on me, man. It's just going to go for it. You know, so come on and just do life, do all of life my way. You know, I'm on my way places. And then they end up being the very people, where they say, for better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness and health. And next thing you know, they're the ones that's blowing it with their spouse. And they think, how could I be this person? I'm supposed to be the one, I'm supposed to manage other people. I'm supposed to take care of other people. Everyone depends on me. Everyone in my family is always looking to me, what they're going to do with life. I'm always solving all their problems, and now it's me that's ending up falling flat on my face. And that's what happened to Peter here. And so it was so tough on him because he thought he was the best. He thought he was the one that had it all together all the time. And Jesus said, you're going to deny me three times. And Peter's going, Jesus, you said that too loud, man. Those guys are going to hear you. Because he had such an image deal, you know. He had an image deal to keep up in front of everyone else. When in reality, in his heart of hearts, he had to face the reality. He became a little baby and ran away as soon as his own life was on the line. Took off, panicked. And so he had all of this regret and shame going on in his life. But Jesus knew that about him. And so this is where he's at. And then Jesus, you know, after he's risen from the dead, hooks up with Peter. And he actually kind of cooks breakfast. He's on the shore there. Peter and disciples are out fishing. They quit doing what Jesus had asked them to do because they thought he was dead. He says, this is a bad dream. I guess we'll just go back to fishing. And Jesus called them all to shore. And Jesus had just a way of restoring Peter, who had blown it so bad. I don't even think Peter could look him in the eyes. And Jesus, it was kind of a play on words. Jesus asked him, Peter, do you love me? But he used the word agape, which means, do you have unconditional love for me? And Peter answers back, yeah, I love you, Lord. That's what it says in the English here. But in the Greek, it says, yeah, I phileo love you, which means like the city of Philadelphia, brotherly love. Yeah, I love you as my brother. And Jesus asked again, do you agape love me? That is, are you really willing to lay your life down for me as I have loved you? And Peter answers back again, yeah, you know, we're buds, you know, come on, you know. And then finally, Jesus asks him, Peter, do you even phileo have brotherly love for me? Come on. And so Peter had, he was wanting the finesse, the past is the past, whatever, but he's having to face that ugly, ugly thing where I'm so strong, I'm so competent, and yet I've so fell flat on my face. He had to really, really, really face that. And you know, Peter said probably the most important thing he ever said in his life at that point. You know what he said? He said this, the know-it-all said to Jesus, Jesus, you know everything. You even know what's going on in my heart and in my mind. Imagine at a wedding ceremony, if the husband is, say, for better, for worse, for richer, poor, sickness, all this stuff, and then it came for the bride's turn, says, well, honey, you know, you're going to be my best bud in this marriage. You know, there's a little difference in the level of commitment there. But Jesus then restored Peter, and he said this, look, I know that you're going to love me as I help you. The best way to love me is to love other people. And that's what he calls feed my sheep. And so here Peter is restored too. And that, what's he called? I mean, the Catholic Church, man, he's like the top dude, isn't he? I mean, you go to the Vatican, you'll see his statue like everywhere. And he was this flaky, volatile dude. And look what Jesus did in his life, the resurrection Jesus, how he transformed his life. And he can do that for each one of us here. You know, I just kind of want to wrap up this whole thing to make it even more sense for us. And just with this. You know this is baseball season, right? Any of you know? Have you noticed a lot more San Francisco Giant jerseys out this year than last year? You know, what's with that? You know, they're dusting them off. You know last year, Giant fans, you know there used to be tons of San Francisco Giant jokes. Did you know that? You know, what's the difference between a baby and a Giants fan? A baby quits crying. I thought that was a good one. What's the difference? You know, how are the San Francisco Giants and a possum alike? What is it? They play dead. Oh, I forgot it. It was funny. It's on the internet. Something about what do possums do? They play dead. Yeah, an opossum only plays dead. Yeah, thank you. Anyway, but they don't say those jokes anymore about them, do they? Why? Because they won the World Series. And so so we love winners is the whole point. We ridicule losers, and we love winners. And in baseball, just let me give you a couple of things here. In baseball, you keep track of numbers, do you not? What are some of the numbers? ERA, what's another one? RBIs, hits, home runs, things like that. And so in baseball, you have this, and you can't hide your failures. When a batter comes up the bat, what do you see up on the stats always? Their batting average, absolutely. I remember a guy, his batting average was .069. And, you know, major leagues, and there, well, he wasn't a pitcher either, by the way. And so in life, you know, baseball, if your perfection is what? Batting 1,000. If someone bats even 300, what are they considered in baseball? If they do that for a career, where do they end up? In the Hall of Fame. You know, Tony Gwynn is one of those dudes. And so you have all of these things about life, and I need to explain something about heaven for you here. Is you can't just be good enough and say I'm better than someone else. I'm pretty good. I'm batting 300. In order to get to heaven, heaven is perfection. And so you have to bat 1,000. And who's going to be able to do that here? We're not going to be able to do that. And so God had a plan B, and it was Jesus Christ. And that's what this painting is about, by the way. It's called Freedom. It's about the only way that we're really going to make it is to have Jesus Christ forgive us of our sins. And so this is the whole baseball image for us. And I just want to give you one last thing in here on that. Because you see here, for Peter, what I want you to know, it's never too late for a fresh start. It's never too late for a fresh start. And that's your last thing here. It's never too late for a fresh start. And sometimes, you know, even in baseball, the clock doesn't run out. And so there's, what does Yogi Berra say? It's never over till it's what? Till it's over, yeah. There was a guy, a Yale physicist named Robert Adair. He did a study of physics in baseball. And what he found out was this. He said, scientifically speaking, that hitting a 90 mile an hour fastball is basically, it's almost impossible because you have a quarter of a second to see the pitch. What else does it say? You have to judge its speed, its location, make the decision in a swing, and start to swing. And to make solid contact with the ball, you have to meet the ball with the bat with at least 1/8 of an inch of dead center at the precisely timed millisecond of that 3-inch spinning sphere as it whizzes by. And he calls it a superhuman feat. And so it's clearly impossible, is what he says. A 95-mile-an-hour fastball is 400 milliseconds for the ball to travel 60 feet and 6 inches to home plate. And so considering the time for the mind to connect with this and whatever, he says this, physics proves that you cannot hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Now, the truth is this. I imagine most of you do not agree with his conclusion. Why? There's one reason. We have all seen people do it, right? We've seen people do it. We see people. It's a difficult thing to do, but we have seen people do that. And you know, when it comes to the resurrection of Jesus Christ, when it comes to changed lives, you're going to have people that put together all their little packages of why this could never happen. But the truth is, we have a historic record of people whose lives have been changed, and throughout the centuries, people whose lives have been changed, that they have engaged the spirit of the resurrected Lord Jesus Christ. And they have witnessed this with their own eyes. And each one of you here, you can have healing for a broken heart. You can have new faith, and you can have a fresh start, just like Mary did, just like Thomas did, and just like Peter did. He's risen, you guys, and that's why I stand here. That's why I have confidence in this. And you can have him in your life, too, if you really want to have that. So I'd like to just have a word of prayer with you on this right now, because this is deep reality that we're talking about. Let's pray.